So we're going to start that right now.
Okay.
And so I just want to caution everybody, sidebar conversations can be picked up. So if you don't want something broadcast to the entire state, you might, you know, keep it to yourself. But anyway, I am Becky Wilson. I'm the executive staff director for the Public Service Commission. And the commissioners have asked me to introduce today's topic and to welcome you all. And the conference, the technical conference, is scheduled in docket number 14035114, and that is in the matter of the investigation of the costs and benefits of Pacific Core's net metering program. The commission issued a notice of technical conference some time ago announcing the purpose of this meeting, and the purpose of this meeting is for Pacific Core to make a presentation today of its plan for performing a load research study on residential net metering customers. And it's also going to provide its schedule for the completion of that study. So we have 2 hours set aside today for this topic, and we'd like to stay focused on this particular topic. There'll be time for questions and answers of the company's study. And then we'll kind of conclude with some next steps that the commission intends to follow through with in this particular docket. And so what we usually start out with is just kind of going around the room so everybody can identify themselves so we all know who's here. And then we'll go to the phone and find out who's on the phone. And then I'll turn the time over to the company. I believe it's Scott. Are you going to
be? Yeah, most of it, I think.
Okay. Well, again, I'm Becky Wilson. I'm the executive director of the Public Service Commission of Utah. And
I'm Rick Gilliam, excuse me, Rick Gilliam with the Vote Solar Initiative here today with Utah Clean Energy.
And Sarah Wright with Utah Clean Energy, and Sophie sends her regrets that she can't be here today.
Casey Roberts with Sierra Club.
I'm Jenny with the Solar City.
Chris Parker from the Division of Public Utilities.
Gary Dodge with the Utah Association of Energy Users.
Joel Stewart with City Corp.
Cheryl Murray, Office of Consumer Services.
Scott Thornton, I'm the manager of the Load Research Group at Pacific Core.
Jerry Mayo, Commission Staff.
Yvonne Hogle, Rocky Mountain Power.
Paul Clements, Rocky Mountain Power.
Eric Anderson, Pacific Core.
I'm Brent Gale, Berkeley, Apple Energy Company.
Marty Powell with the Division.
I'm Charles Phillips, I think I'm up to fill everyone.
Hi, Jennifer Gardner with the Office of Energy Development.
Blake Thomas with the Office of Energy Development.
Tyler Polson with the City of Salt Lake City.
Melanie Rive with the Commission.
Stan Holmes with UCARE.
Kayla Vastine with the Office of Consumer Services.
Rex Olson with the Attorney General's Office on behalf of the Office of Consumer Services.
Dan LaVar with the Public Service Commission.
Michelle Beck, Office of Consumer Services.
John Harvey, Commission Staff.
Bob Davis, Division.
Dave Clark with the Public Service Commission.
Ron Allen, Commission Chairman.
Jordan White with the Commission.
Kate Baldwin with Utah Clean Energy.
Sarah Baldwin, AUK with the Interstate Renewable Energy Council.
Douglas Marks with Rocky Mountain Power.
Okay, and who do we have on the phone today? Okay. Okay. Well, when they join us again, we'll have to give their introductions. And, I believe they're scheduled to be, I think, 3 people on the line. So we could just maybe wait a minute and see.
Did you guys yes.
Oh, and also, we're making copies of the company's presentation.
Oh, actually, there's some coming. They'll be here in about 5 minutes.
The copies?
Yeah.
Okay, so.
I printed them, bundled them up, and left them on my desk.
Okay. So, just to let you know they're coming.
And perhaps, like, if you can send an electronic copy to maybe Beth Grant to put on the docket.
Okay.
the technical conference for load research?
Yes, it is. And we have just gone through introductions throughout the room. Could you please identify yourself for the benefit of everyone in the room?
Sure. This is Eli Gilfamong from Solar City.
Hi, and this is Thad Cully on behalf of the Alliance for Solar Choice.
Anyone else? All right, well, welcome to this technical conference. We're going to turn the time over to the company now as it presents its plans for its load research study and its schedule for completing that study.
Okay, well, just so you all know, my dreams of being able to address about a half a dozen people in this meeting have been shattered. my name again is Scott Thornton. I am the manager of the Load Research Group. I've been in that position for about the past 8 years. I have been in Load Research for about 31 years, 25 of those years designing samples. So hopefully you'll keep that in mind before you tear into what I've done. Moving on, I also tend to get up and move around a bit. So if you're prone to sticking your legs out, you may get kicked. Things we want to go over here, I'm going to give you a quick background on the load research, what we do, why we do it. Then we're going to do a little quick overview of the current status of the residential net metering study that's going in place right now. And then we'll go on to the proposed next steps. What is load research? Load research allows utilities to study the ways their customers use electricity, either in total or by individual end uses. That's kind of a vague definition. What we actually do is we allow the customer to actually, or the customer, the company, to drill down to specific periods of time and find out what various classes of customers are doing at that specific time. For instance, system peak, jurisdictional peak, class peaks, distribution peaks, and so on. If we want to know what the residential, commercial, industrial irrigation loads are doing at that time, you use load research to get those answers. What is it really? Again, if you're able to drill down to specific periods of time, you can use the loads at those specific times to allocate costs, design customer rates, forecast loads. They actually do on the total load profile, which we provide to the forecasting department. They use it to size transformers and distribution circuits. We will actually go out and put load research metering on all the end uses around a given transformer to see if we're sizing them correctly, and then provide enhanced customer service. We do offer some services because when customers see load profile data, they tend to get excited about it and they want to know more about it. So we do make that data available to them. There we go. Just a quick update on what a load research meter is, and hopefully you already have a sense of this. A regular billing meter would go out, we'll read the meter this month, we'll subtract last month's read, we'll apply a multiplier to convert it, the number of engineering units. And we'll know that you used 1,000 kilowatt hours during that month, and you'll be billed for that 1,000 kilowatt hours. The difference between that and a load research meter is that the load research meter, it is as if we have a little meter reader in that meter, and he's taking a meter read every 15 minutes, or every 30 minutes, or every 60 minutes, however that meter's been programmed. So at the end of the month, again, we know that you used 1,000 kilowatt hours, but we know exactly when you used that kilowatt hours, used those kilowatt hours.
A question on the meter?
Yeah.
Does it record just positive amounts, like this picture is showing, or the net meter study, does it record negative amounts?
Well, actually, if you think about a net meter, it's positive going from the company to the customer. It's positive coming from the company, from the customer to the company. So they're both positive amounts. Depending on what you want to do with that data, you would then multiply it by a negative one or whatever.
But it's capturing both streams?
Yes. Okay. We have a stream going to the customer, from the customer. And I actually have some slides in here a little later. I'll show you that.
And is that 15 minute data?
Yes. I'm going to throw this one to Joelle, actually.
Oh, why is probably this?
Oh, well, this didn't show up at all.
That's right
for
this one?
Oh, it's one of those. Okay.
Slides
more. It's a little more complicated than it looks.
One more.
One more.
There you go. There's another side that we're kind of touching on this too, that most parties who are, have been actively engaged in all of our rate cases understand the flow. So we start with the total company revenue requirement. We split it by jurisdiction with the, right now, the 2010 protocol is agreed upon through the MSP. And then for rate cases, once we get that Utah revenue requirement, you do a class cost of service study where we split those costs across the different customer classes. And then the next step is then rate design. And so the load research data that we use for Utah class cost of service comes from Scott, which goes into our cost of service and then also influences our rate design. That's that in a nutshell.
Okay, there are actually two groups within the company that collect load profile data, and load profile data for both of those groups is used for cost allocation. The first one of those groups is the Power Operations Metering Group, that's not my group. And what they're doing is collecting load profile data from generation stations, from jurisdictional tie line points, from third-party metering points. And they're using that information to build up the total generation or total power that occurs within a state. And once you have all the power that's occurring within a state, for instance, this is Utah, Oregon, so on, then you can start stacking those together and you come up with the total power used by the system. So you have some system-wide costs that need to be allocated back to the states. You would use the power operations metering to allocate those costs back to the states based on how the states are stacked up at the time the system peak or however it's needed. Load research is kind of the same way, except we're starting from the other end. We're so putting
in. Need to sit and do a punch up and down button on the computer.
We need retail loads, residential, general service, irrigation, and so on. Again, we stack those up to come up to the total jurisdictional load. In theory, you would hope that this line would match the Utah line from the power operations stuff. Never does for various reasons, one of them being net metering. The other problem we have here is because we're measuring at the source, at your house or your business or whatever. These loads do not have losses, so we need to have losses back in. Right, Rick. Here we go.
And so this is just a little bit more detail on how we use the load research and the cost of service study. We use the monthly coincident peaks, and these are the system peaks for the each Utah class. And we use those to allocate the generation and transmission demand costs. We use the monthly distribution peaks for the substations, poles, and conductors. And then non-coincidental peaks are for the transformers and secondary lines. And you'll see at the end where we have some proposed next steps. If there's interest, we would recommend that, you know, we could go into we have a technical workshop that goes into the cost of service study and a lot more painful granular level detail, if there's that desire.
Joelle, the monthly coincident peaks allocating generation and transmission, that's after you've gotten your share from the Pacific Northwest Water.
Yeah, so we allocate in cost of service study only that Utah revenue report.
Right.
Yeah, and but for those costs, we use that system heat.
Right.
I was going to say that there is a white figure from the college that has all the allocation factors in there.
The cost allocation?
Right.
Yeah.
That people are interested in looking at that.
I'm multitasking poorly.
Okay, this rather colorful card from the chart with the other sections 2008. We were trying to get all of our load studies on a schedule where we were replacing them every 5 years, which it turned out was a federal law that we were doing. So we got them all on a 5-year schedule. We also tried to make sure we were not replacing any more than one load study in any given jurisdiction at a time.
document.
This is, we're just looking at Utah here, residential PV load study. Again, 5 years. The thing you should also note about this is our load studies are continuous. If we file a rate case right here, the data we're going to be using for that rate case is going to be coming from this year here. Not this year here when the load study was installed. And that's out here in place. Examples of load shapes. This is the Utah residential system peak day. 28 June 2013, that was actually not the system peak day for 2013. That was the system peak day for the base year that was used in the most prior rate case, or most recent rate case, which was June or July 2012 through June 2013. The actual system peak day in 2013 occurred 4 days later on July 1st.
And it's more like 7 o'clock.
Yeah. The one thing I want you to notice about this load shape before we move on to the next, because they're going to confuse the heck out of you, is this is a pretty smooth load shape. If you're looking at, if you were to come to us and say we need the average load shape for a load shape for an average residential customer, this is what you would get. Pretty smooth. See, just under 3 kW is where he peaks out. And that's because there's a whole lot of customers that go into making up this load shape. If you start looking at load shapes on an individual basis, individual customers are not this neat and clean. Go ahead and hit the
Would you say that general shape is consistent across years throughout Utah? I mean, obviously the peak's going to hit differently and you'll have different amplitude on those curves, but the general shape is... You could draw on a map.
Back that up a bit.
Yeah, that looks...
Okay. Well, one thing I will mention about this, and some of you might remember this, in June 2013, the last 6 days of that month, every day it was over 100. It was hot. So you're seeing a good air conditioning ramp up on this. And this is typical for a summer residential load shape. So a winter load shape.
Yeah.
Okay. This is actually an individual customer load shape. This comes from one of the so far 12 customers who have agreed to participate in the residential beach load study. You probably already recognize this. This is the output coming off of the solar panel. And I deliberately tried to find the sunniest day I could, so this is about as perfect a load shape as you're going to see for a residential solar output. Next page. This is that individual customer that's not as neat and clean as what we saw before. Again, you have the ramp up in the afternoon, but the rest of this is kind of a mess. This upper line is the customer's total usage, where he's above the blue line here. This includes not only our delivery to the customer, but what he's pulling off of his solar array. This lower line is what we're actually delivering to that customer. So you can see when he's sending energy back to the company, his load has dropped to zero. Makes sense. This is the same customer 4 days earlier. I keep this in just to show that it's not always sunny in southern Utah. Little hammer. Again, same thing. Total customer usage, net customer usage, and then we'll deliver back to the company.
That prior slide was 15 minute intervals, if you want.
All of these have been 15 minute intervals. If you were looking at 1 minute data, this is really weird.
So Scott, so in the load research study, you'll be collecting gross consumption as well as the other two pieces of data. But
we don't collect gross consumption. This is actually a calculated value.
Oh, okay.
You take his generation plus our delivery less what he's sending back.
But from what we're planning to do is, the plan is to meter not only what comes across our meter from us to the customer, but also what the customer's production is.
So
with the combination of those two, you can tell what the customer's total usage, what we're sending, and what they're sending back.
I see. So you're going to get gross production as well as...
Yes. That's the plan.
These are the quantities that are actually coming out of the net meter. This is our delivery to the customer. His delivery back to us. Again, this comes out as a positive. We get it here. We negative it.
Is the 15-minute data average 15 minutes, or is it red of average? It's an average. It's red every 15 seconds?
Well, it's actually...
7 seconds?
How long?
There's an old explanation for this. I'm going to have to back old time meters to get to it. Everybody remember the meters that had the dial that was spinning? We don't have those anymore. Imagine if you drilled a hole through that dial and you put a flashlight on one side and a little photovoltaic cell on the other. And every time that dial went around, it sent a pulse to a mass memory area. That's kind of what's going on here. Every time that dial goes around, we get a pulse. And every 15 minutes, we sum up those pulses and we apply a multiplier that gives us the average demand for that period.
Okay. So those are discrete 15-minute periods and stuff?
They're rolling. No, they're fixed 15-minute periods.
Your billing demand meter would be a rolling 15 minutes.
Right.
But the load research say they would capture discrete 15-minute chunks. Okay.
15, 30, 45.
Could you, I apologize if this is a very basic question, but could you explain to me the few points when the green line is below zero but the blue line is still positive? Most of the time, as you explained, when the green line is negative, the blue line is zero, but there's a few points when the blue line is positive and the green line is negative.
Can you point me to one of those points?
Well, from 10 and a half, from 3 to 5 in the afternoon, 15, 17.
Okay, 15.
See the blue.
Yeah. So you see this guy doing this? Well, this guy's doing this.
Yeah, so what's going on during those hours?
Scott, I think the green line is their total production.
Yeah,
right?
This is what's
it's
coming
not
back
the, it's not
to
the,
us.
Oh, so, okay, that's not a net.
No, this is the net right here.
The blue.
That's what you're considering.
So when they're sending power back to us, we drop to zero.
Or zero.
So if you kept the green line is a positive, in those hours, the green line would be above the red line.
Yeah, for 12, 13, 14.
Yeah.
Well, and you mentioned earlier that this is not measured. It's calculated for the production.
The red line is calculated.
The production's calculated, and what flows across
right.
Our meter's calculated. So the total line is the is a calculation.
Just
the total customer usage.
Right.
So it may not be accurate. You're using some of your PV watts estimated to say.
No, that's not correct. That's not. This is meter data.
Is a system production meter?
Yeah, we added an additional meter.
Yes.
So the customer has to agree. Like you meter the system, even though
yeah, I just wanted further explanation on that. It sounds like the answer, but it sounds like there is a smart meter, assuming that's what we're doing the end job.
Actually, we'll get to it.
Okay.
This is smarter than dumb dumb.
Yeah.
I'm just curious, you have a meter that's on the output of the PV system,
yes.
Correct? And then you put in new meters for the billing meter as well.
Yes.
Okay, so this is the configuration, and then on the back end, you're actually matching those 15-minute intervals.
Yes. That slide before here with the last curve, that was the meter that was measuring what was coming out of the production.
Okay.
You know, that nice curve.
Scott, just to follow up on Commissioner LaVar's question, so in that period from about 2 to 5 o'clock, an example might be that their air conditioner is ramping up. Their solar panel isn't keeping up with production, and they're having to take more power from our system to keep up with their load in the afternoon.
But wouldn't, maybe I'm not reading this right, wouldn't the green line then, I'm sorry, wouldn't the blue line go to zero? It seems like whenever the commissioner's point, whenever the green line is negative, it seems like the blue line should be zero.
If you had instantaneous data.
So it's because there's a lag here, then that's why.
Well, because you're averaging 15-minute bunches, and your air conditioner may be on for 5 minutes of it.
So you're talking about this one period right here.
The hour.
Right.
Those are time periods where the customer is using more than their solar panel is producing.
Mm-hmm.
But
they're still taking some.
They're taking more from us.
You're right, that makes no sense.
Yeah.
Scott.
Well, I think it's just because you're averaging the 15 minutes. At any instantaneous moment, they do have to be in that thing. But if you're averaging the whole 15 minutes,
5 minutes. Wouldn't it be more accurate to label the green line as the kilowatt hours from the PV array?
After the customer takes a bite.
Yeah, this is only what flows back to us. It's not the total production, it's what flowing back to us.
Match this up with the other one.
But why would it?
This is your generation.
Why would it flow back to you and you still provide power to the company? I don't know the answer to that. That seems counterintuitive.
No, this is your generation. It's just because you're averaging at 15 minutes.
Right. Because for 5 minutes, your conditioner's running and it's taking more power, but for 10 minutes, their conditioner's off and power is being fed back to the system.
Right.
If there were 1 minute granular data or 30 second granular data, maybe there wouldn't be these short little bursts of inconsistency. But since it's a 15 minute, even at that amount, at some point during that 15 minutes, it's taking power from us, and at some point during that 15 minutes, we'll be getting it back.
It could also be that they have kids like mine, and so you see me going through the house and turning the lights off, and then turning them back.
Every 15 minutes.
Yeah.
But at this point, it is possible to drop to zero usage for a 10-minute period and have 5 minutes of usage, and you're going to see things go both ways.
So I'm just curious, so you have a Monday, which doesn't have as much production in the handout, and then up here we have the Friday, which has more production towards the coincident peak time. So I guess it just shows that it varies quite a bit daily. So we have October 20th.
Like coming up?
Would it be the 17th?
We have both.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it just shows that it varies daily.
But you're right, but you're just looking at 2 days of the year.
Yeah.
Obviously, that can still look different every day.
Okay.
And
then
you can see on the production, same production
here, but 2 days apart.
Hopefully,
the cloud cover here.
Right. Okay.
Great. Thank you. I didn't want to get bogged down on these, by the way. You're never
going to
see these again.
We want to, though. We like them.
The next slide you see, or the next data you see from us, is going to have those nice slow curves. Okay, this one. This is my geek slide. I did throw that up there.
Scott, I think you have some more questions here.
Well, I guess just to clarify, the reason we have smooth slides is you've got 100,000 customers. If you have one full service regular customer, and you were metering just that one, their data is going to bounce all over too, not as much as just that one. As a net meter, but it's still going to bounce around.
Yeah. One customer is pretty spiky. Lots of customers are.
It would be like the red line.
Okay, before I jump into this, quick statistic lesson before you question the answer on this. Let's say we had a group, a big group, 700,000 customers, 700,000 residential utility customers. And let's further say that every one of those customers used the same amount of energy in the same amount, in the same way, every day, every hour. How many sample points would I need to sample that group?
One.
Okay, so sample size is not solely driven by the size of the population. It's a combination of population and the variance in that population, or the amount of difference around the mean, the average. There are sampling techniques that we can use, one of them being stratified random sampling, to reduce the amount of variance in the overall sample, which allows us to use dramatically lower number of sample points to get the answer we want. This is, as we go through this, I think the numbers over there, you're going to see for the population we looked at, we really do have what looks like a small sample size, and it is a small sample size, but we use this technique to basically get to that point. I'll try and walk you through it. What we have is our work
born.
Pardon?
I said if they're interested, they are born.
Yeah, and I can get you that one. It will cross your eyes. For a strain of sample, 0, 400, 400, 900, 900, 2000, and greater than 2000, that's a really big block. Infinity is a big number. For this particular sample design, 1,578 customers. This was done in April. We actually had 2,200 customers at that time. But for purposes of the sample design, we only wanted to include customers who have been net metering customers for at least 9 months. We needed an established usage pattern. So it's only 1578 went into the sample. The means of reducing variance that I talked about, for instance, this first strata is 0 to 400. That's that's a pretty small variance range, if you will. And you see that the variance is reasonably small for that. But the population is over half of our 1578. Conversely, here, we have this huge frequent variance, but only 54 customers. If you look at this, to sample these 54 customers, we put in at least 15 meters. So it's about 30% of the customers in this group we're going to sample to cover that variance. Up here, it's not quite as much. We're going to be putting in 12 or more for 761 customers. But again, the variance is much smaller in that group.
You have a question, Scott?
Are those ranges for kilowatt hours that are bill consumption from
the
utility?
They're actually for the net bill.
Oh, for the net bill.
Which causes me some heartburn.
So this is just net metering customers you're looking at?
Yes.
Like
yes. Yes.
Normal sample criteria, we use Cooper standards, which is plus or minus 10 precision, 10% precision at the 90% confidence level, which means 9 times out of 10, we expect our sample average to be within plus or minus 10% of the actual average. In this case, we actually went to 95%. So we bumped this up a little bit. Plugging all the numbers in, it actually said we need a sample size of 45. I don't like to go quite that small. We have some minimum standards for strata, and then I also got some approval for about 15 additional meters here, so we bumped this up. We're looking at fitting in 62 meters to achieve a sample with 95% confidence, plus or minus 10%.
So, Scott, just to put that in perspective, as to why you can use a relatively small number of meters with the population. How many do we have for the total residential class in Utah, which is like 700,000?
195.
So it's a much, much larger percentage of net metering customers are being sampled than the residential population in general.
Well, things get a little goofy. We actually have more net metering customers in Oregon, but the sample size up there is smaller. Just depends on the variance against the population.
If you wanted to reduce the margin of error, not the 95%, but
right.
10%, if you want to reduce that to the 5% that we often use in statistics, how much would that help the sample size?
I did calculate that. I think that gets us up in the 120 range.
So twice as many?
Reducing the precision has a more dramatic effect on sample size than reducing the confidence level.
Right. Okay, I know that. I've seen the numbers.
I have a follow-up question. I have a sort of related question. And everyone knows I'm a huge advocate for evaporative coolers. And I really believe that air conditioning, people that are air conditioning, are actually being subsidized by people that have evaporative coolers because they're not contributing to the peak as much. So have you looked at how many have evaporative coolers and then versus condenser-based cooling? And then it seems like you're increasing the sample size with the energy hogs that we know have big air conditioning systems, where in the efficient range, you still have a pretty small sample.
Well, you're reading a lot into sizes. I guess we're assuming this is the energy hogs.
Nope. That's fair.
I don't know if that's necessarily because they have evaporative cooling or simple cooling. By the way, you have companies do commercials on there, like a shit ton of them.
Yeah, these are the red
users. These net meters, so while the large users probably are energy hogs, it's somewhat likely that some of the others are as well. That they have, if just because you're
well, that's why I wanted to find out who was at. Evaporative coolers.
You could have air conditioning in a larger system, or you could.
Right, and that's why it would be really nice. I think looking at the net meter is not the correct way to look at it because you're not looking at what their usage is.
It's all the data he has.
Okay, two quick answers. First of all, she said what a net metering. The net metering value was the only variable we had to work with. And second, we didn't do any demographic.
And I really think that we're missing something there because people that use evaporative coolers are really putting much less burden on the system. And it would be nice to know.
This is a unique group. These could actually be really good, really big customers.
With a lot of generation.
Really much bigger solar arrays.
Yeah, so we're really not getting at what these customers look like without solar.
Yeah, have to be a follow-up.
Well, as a potential follow-up history to think about, I don't want to answer now. You do have three bits of data that you get on from the regular meter. I'm assuming you already talked about, you get the amount that Pacific Core delivers to the customer during the month, the amount that the customer delivers to Pacific Core, and then you bill them for the net. So you could look at that amount Pacific Core sent and then see if it changes which of the four categories they're in very much as a way just to check.
If I'd actually add in for access to those three pieces of information, that would have been so great for the customer.
Why wouldn't you have it? Your company has it.
The only thing I could pull out of our billing system is the net.
I just want to
That's true, because I'm a net meter and I can't get it on your website either.
This is a good discussion. I just want to remind folks that at the end of the presentation, we will be talking about kind of next steps for comments on the study, et cetera. So just make sure everyone's aware that we'll have an opportunity, I guess, to actually give comments. But anyway.
I understand that you're just kind of doing this prospective way. You don't have this meter data for net meter customers before they put the solar on their home. But you would have the annual and even monthly consumption for those customers for prior periods, wouldn't you?
Well, there ain't lesser new construction.
Because one of the things we've seen in other states is that customers that put solar on their homes and businesses tend to be more efficient, and particularly after they put the solar on, if they tend to be more energy aware and put more efficiency measures into their use. So I'd be curious to see if there's, because you have the effectively their consumption, their total consumption after net metering. It'd be interesting to see if there's an effect on an efficiency.
There actually have been studies done on that, and you're right, solar tends to go in conjunction with some other major change in what they're doing. Maybe they bought an electric car.
In fact, we encourage people to, before you invest in solar, do all the energy efficiency you can first, and then...
Yeah, we all do.
Yeah, right, because you'll get more return on your investment there first.
I'm guessing this is my last slide.
Oh. I think I already talked about it.
Okay, this was, again, the study we put together in April. My original was a cost of service only study, in which case 62 meters and 7,700. I was informed shortly after I put this together that we would be installing production site metering on these accounts as well. That caused me a major amount of heartburn for several reasons, one of which being we had just gone through this whole thing about the surcharge on PV customers in Utah. PV customers don't like us very well now. And in order to install production side metering, we would need to install a production side meter base. And in order to install a production side meter base, we need customers' permission. And that's been slow in coming in Utah.
How many of you come?
Well, here we go.
Okay. You want to touch on this, Eric? How do we have?
Sure, we've been reaching out to customers now for about 4 months, 5 months. We first tried to solicit voluntary participation. We sent two letters to the sample group of preferred participants. We didn't receive all that many people gladly participating in the study. I think about 15 people just agreed at that point. We then revisited in September in hopes of getting more customers. So that first preferred customer, we sent a letter offering them a $100 incentive to allow us to install a production meter base. We haven't had all that much luck. We're at 30.
Actually a little higher than that. This is an older slide.
Okay, yeah, so as of Monday afternoon, we're a little higher. I think we're at 38 or 39 at this point. But Also, in that, after that third letter was sent, we've tried two outbound calls to customers, but haven't gotten many responses. When we do get a hold of customers in those situations, we tend to get emphatic no's, so it's quite clear that they don't want to participate at that point, rather than just they forgot to mail in the $100 approval, they let us know how much they don't want to participate in the study. So where we've got a hold of people. So we've tried, in essence, five times to get in contact with the primary participants. We've since sent out letters, a much larger mailer, to basically all of the potential alternates that that were selected when Scott created the study. I guess the basics for that is there's the preferred customer, and then he selected five alternates, or four alternates. So five total for each of the 62 slots. And so now we've sent out letters to all of the alternates, and we're waiting, giving some time for a response to come back, and then eventually we'll just pick the highest alternate to participate in the study. So if that's the second or the fourth, depending on if the people above him participate, we'll choose the highest alternate.
So yeah, the handout we gave is a little more current than what's on the slide that's showing up here.
Okay.
We have had more people agree to participate, but when we went to their site, retroactively putting in production meter bases can be quite expensive. If you do it at the time of installation, typically not all that burdensome on the customer. When you go back in and after they're already put in and with a separate electrician, we've run into some where the bids were $6,000 to $7,000 just to rewire their whole facility. And so just that didn't seem prudent to spend that much for an individual meter. So we've gone to some alternates in those locations.
Okay. How did you select the preferred participants?
Actually, that one's back to me. When we decide how many customers we want in the study, in this case 62, we first of all take that block of 1,587 customers as our population, break them into the strata assignment that they would have belonged to, rank them by the energy, in this case net energy, select a random starting point, and then increment by a fixed x, the x being the number of sample points divided into the total population.
So that's a pretty standard procedure.
Yeah, we do that with all our load studies. And for these load studies, we do that five times. So the first time through, that's our list of primaries. The second time, first alternate, second alternate, third alternate. So
you're trying to get an accurate within each net consumption block. You're trying to get the full range.
Right. Because as we process this, the first thing we're going to do is calculate the average for that block. And then we're going to weight those averages and have them together.
So I'm still trying to figure out why you just looked at the energy usage and didn't do some sort of layering of energy usage with system size, because I feel like we're missing a big piece of information there. Like,
with
what
their
was the decision that
system size?
Yeah, the size of their system and the usage, because I feel like we're missing some big information there.
There are a lot of pieces to this that we're missing that I wish had been available to help with the design.
Because we have the system size. You have
that.
Well,
actually, that first slide I showed you, the individual customer, he's actually a Southern Utah customer, that perfect load shape. According to our system, he has a 3.7 kW solar array. According to that slide we looked at, it was 2.2. So we are
it's
either
October,
wrong,
so.
Or he's lost part of his array.
Or it's October and not summer where you have the total output.
Well, you're not going to lose.
What do you do?
Yeah, quite a bit.
Yeah.
Well, over the course of the day, but the peak production you lose as well.
You only
October
hit
versus June.
Maybe for a couple of seconds a year.
So I'm just thinking that for a real study that's looking at the impact of net metering customers, we need to think about. Well, you've been doing this for 31 years, but we need to really think about how we're stratifying the system size and the energy use together, so that we can look at that.
I agree, and I'm. There will be significant looking at this once we start getting data in to see if some post stratification is required.
Thank you.
And we are doing where available. We are double checking to see if our records are accurate with what we think they have installed. And mostly it's just we go out there and count the panels from the ground. We don't know what the voltage of those panels are, but we can make an average guess that they're somewhere around 240 or 250 for whatever older system, so they may be 225s or something like that. So we're getting within a range of what the size is, so we're sort of double checking, making sure that they're not adding, they haven't not told us when they expanded their system or something.
And that's being tracked in some kind of database,
are you
saying? So customer surveys and counting.
Well, yeah, we'll match it with the participants in the program. Yeah.
I'm wondering about geographical diversity as part of the study. Are you looking into this or just based on kilowatt-hour blocks?
The participants were totally randomly selected based on the kilowatt-hour blocks. I can't say they are located all over the state. I can't say if the proportion in Salt Lake. Well, I could say the proportion in Salt Lake is greater than the proportion in, say, Washington. But whether it is a strict percentage kind of match, 30% here, 10% there, that's probably not going to happen.
Okay, like feeder diversity is
going to
be a
part of the
thing.
But in the end, you'll have a map of some sort that says where each of the customers is located.
And just one final question for the customers that are self-selecting to be part of this, are they stratified by energy usage or are they more towards, you know?
Stratified by energy usage.
So it is very, I guess, are they balanced? Is it a diverse group that's agreeing to do this?
Are they? I'm sorry.
First of all, they're not self-selected.
Well, the ones that are agreeing to do it after being asked, the ones that are actually saying yes.
The ones who are.
Are you losing the ones
our
that are
selection.
Super efficient because they don't trust the utility at all and just getting the higher energies? I'm just wondering.
It's kind of like a Chinese restaurant. You need one foot all the way, one foot all the way.
Yeah, I'm just wondering who's saying yes.
It's pretty well it's spread out. We're getting people from all four of the groups at this point. The goal is to fill out the study, so we'll hang.
If we're only looking at volunteers, maybe we have some kind of bias.
Well, they're not really volunteers, they're targeted volunteers.
Because,
you
start with a random selection.
Basis.
Yeah, and you don't ask them to start.
But your question about bias is valid, and it's something we worry about, something we're going to do. Yes?
Are you, I can tell that you're not considering the orientation of the panels in how you select people, but are you also, when you do these site visual surveys, making notes about panels oriented to the south or to the west and move
that? It's actually the VM that are going out and doing this, so they're trying to keep it as simple as possible.
Wait, I'm sorry, two going out and doing it?
We have an inventory sheet Eric provides. This is what the company thinks the customer has out there based on what the customer's provided. And we're asking the meterman while they're out there to verify relationships with
it. And we're not asking for tilt or azimuth because we didn't accept for small percentage that are participating in the Utah Solar Incentive Program. We don't have that background data for their, we wouldn't want our meter from climbing up to the house with a solar eye and getting accurate information. So there is basically count the panels, tell us if there's significant shading, tell us if it's fixed or single array, tell us if it's wind or solar. Those are the basic questions, so it's pretty simple to survey.
On the incentive that you mentioned,
yes.
The $100, can you put on whether that's a one-time incentive or whether that's not a long incentive?
One time. We're looking to get the checks out before Christmas. Right now, 12 people are getting checks.
This is just a guess about information flows within the company. There's a pretty extensive document that maybe the customer or contract customer fills out with Pacific Corp when they become a network customer, and this book calculates their effective DC based on everything from the inverter type and the panel type. It sounds like that information is not available to your group.
No, we have I mean, we have the installation size, and I would say that as far as that information is accurate, if we have it, I would say it's not very accurate. Typically, the general size of the facility being installed is close, but the system, we don't get as-built numbers, I guess I would say. We get what the installer thought they were going to put in before they actually got to the site and figured out that they could get, you know, 260-watt panels up there versus 255, you know, 10 260s rather than 9 255s or something like that. And so it is not, I would not want to portray it as that we're 100% confident. That
Eric, it's all self-reported data?
It's all self-reported data. I mean, and
it's the installers.
So what is the interconnection team verifying all of this?
We do. Right. They send a one line in, and then we approve the one line that they sent in, and then we have the government inspectors go out and make sure that it's not going to burn their house down. But we do not do an as-built check to go out there and make sure that they use 12 panels versus 11 panels.
But for distribution safety reasons, you want to make sure that anything that provided in the
right. Yes, but we're yes. You're correct. The more information we have, we try to make it as accurate as possible. Assuming the customers don't tell us they're putting in a 2 kW system and then 5 days later add 4 kW to their sites, would not be a good assumption. We get lots of people who expand their systems and don't. Well, we already got an interconnection request. We already got a net meter in there. We have lots of anecdotal evidence for what we think and what they told us they're putting in is different than what is there 5 years later, you know, or 3 years later. So that's why we're sending metermen out there to go double check and verify that what we think are in our records, which is what came off of their interconnection request, is what's actually there, so we can match it up with this other. We don't do that for 3,000 sites. We have points of origin sites as on a standard basis.
But as part of this, we'll have a lot of information.
Right, as accurate as we can get, those have.
Moving on.
So while we're collecting with that, we weren't sure what the commission's next steps were going to be, but we thought we'd propose some potential future technical conferences that we identify. One, the value benefits of customer generation, big topic in the rate case, that one we may want to focus on for a workshop. The impacts on the distribution grid, we can get into a lot of more nitty-gritty kind of keying off what Douglas Marks included in his testimony. And then, as I mentioned, the cost of service study, potential rate designs, we did indicate in the rate case that we were looking at a three-part rate, for a net metering customer. So if we could just have a broader discussion on rate designs, if there's interest in that. And then net metering with non-residential rate schedules. This load research study is focused on the residential customers where we have seen a lot more growth in the net metering and where we just don't have the detailed demand load research data. For all of our other rate schedules, we do have demand data, but we could delve into that in a little bit more detail. And then as far as the load research study, we need to get through the summer with the load research, and then at that point we can start breaking down the data, since getting through the summer is what most of the costs, it's what drives most of the costs from the cost of service study.
So that'll be a year from now?
September 2015.
So you don't feel
like a full year's worth, but
we'll be collecting these meters will be in for 5 years, but we gotta get through at least some of them, and that will give us a much better data set that we can actually start putting into the cost of service study.
So your intention is you don't think you need a full year of data in order to begin that process?
We think we can, if we get through summer, we can really begin looking at it, and then as we get in through the rest of the year, we can verify those shoulder months to the prior shoulder months, that Scott can kind of extrapolate the shoulder month data from the beginning of the year, and then we can verify it as we go through. But we gotta get through.
Get to 63.
Right, so how does that affect what we're doing?
No,
we'll have those.
Before the end of the year, so we.
For the addition?
Yeah.
We start collecting data in January.
So we'll have, you know, those 63 meters in, we can start reading them in January 1. We wanna get through September, and then October, start actually analyzing that data.
So for, you said you have data for the commercial customers, we said.
Not commercial net metering.
Not commercial net metering. You have the.
Yeah, but we have more demand-based data that we can use to look at billing impacts, you know, so that those customers, most of them are on demand meters.
So.
We have one schedule where.
What you don't have would be the effect of the, yeah, well, you have 15-minute data, but only on net load, right?
Well, no, I mean, our net meters, even for those customers, should have the two registers, but we won't have production data.
Yeah, and we don't have the specific load research sample of the net metering subset of our general service customers. So that's.
We don't need a sample there, because you have the whole population, you don't have that data.
For the most part.
You only need a sample if you don't have data, but these folks all have.
Well, we have total population for customers that are greater than megawatt.
Right.
But for non-residential customers that are smaller than megawatt, it's still sample data.
That's schedule 23.
Total population, and there's not a subsample for that maybe.
And we looked at. And we need to relook at it, but we looked at 23 before we filed the case as we were putting together the net metering facilities chart. And at that time, most of the customers on schedule 23, they were the really large, they were on the larger end of the spectrum of schedule 23 customers, so they were getting that demand charge already. But, you know, with the growth we've seen just over the last year, that's something that we want to do, is sort of relook at who is on net metering from these customers and do more detailed billing analysis of maybe before and after.
I think it'd be really important to do that, and maybe to put some production meters out there as well, because the load tends to be more coincident with the solar generation times, at least, if not profile. You know, in other words, C&I customers tend to peak during the middle of the day, not at 7 o'clock or 8 o'clock at night. So it'd be, I think, really interesting to look at the interplay between cloud events and the customer's peak throughout the course of the year, really, but especially in the summertime.
Joel, I just want to mention while you're on next steps, this is something that, you know, as Becky mentioned, that the commission will be issuing a notice of kind of a timeline for potential comments. This is something we'd probably include in terms of, you know, folks, you know, desire, or, you know, to have these, you know, types of additional type of conferences. One question I guess I had was, if we were to have a notice like that, what is the general consensus in terms of like timing? Are we thinking 2 weeks, 30 days for comments, just so we can have a good sense of that?
On the
we'd offer folks to have to comment on the company's presentation, and then also some of the additional issues surrounding the net metering docket. Do people have an idea of what is 30 days sufficient?
For the whole net metering docket?
No. For this one.
I mean, for comments on the net metering docket?
Yeah, I don't, that would be really quick.
So I guess there's two parts of that question. Is this all you have written up on your, I'm sure you have more that, see, I would like to take this to a consultant. I know you did a good job, but to have a consultant look at it and do a technical review, so I'm assuming you have.
Are you talking about the sample design?
Sample design.
I actually have a more complete thing in a PDF, which if you send a request today, that would.
Okay.
Be.
Well, perhaps it would be helpful to have that on the record. So if you could maybe file that.
I'll send it to Dave.
Okay, and Dave will help us get that on the record.
So the first question is how much time for comments on the load research study?
Yeah, and I guess I should, let me put a little bit more on that. And this is the disclaimer from the lawyer here. This is not a hearing. We're not taking evidence right now. And I have to say this also because we have three commissioners here. So this is really just an opportunity for the company to present their study and for folks to give additional input in it. I mean, if the company wants to volunteer, that's fine. But I don't know if we're in the mode yet for discovery, et cetera, gave us is just the kind of the first step in this. So it's more just the idea of like how much time do you want to comment based upon what they presented in terms of the study. And then again, we'll have a notice for additional information. Just and one more little disclaimer. Again, we have commissioners and commissioner staff in here. So we're, you know, to the extent that, you know, comments are made, et cetera, this is just, again, this is not the opinion of the commission. This is, we're not in the mode yet of actually considering evidence, et cetera. So with that, again, is 30 days sound right for just making comments? Or, I mean, I'm happy to be longer. This is just, we're just trying to get a general idea. Marty?
Well, I think with what Sarah's saying is she needs time for consultants to look at the sample design and see if they're satisfied with that.
Okay.
That might take longer. But what we need kind of in the immediate future is a schedule. And so if we're going to have additional technical conferences, I think, so that's what I'm saying is 30 days is more than adequate, I think, to say this is the type of schedule that I think we would like to see. And these are potentially the technical conferences we would like.
On the study, right?
On kind of what we're going to be doing over the next year. I don't know how long it's going to take.
Well, let's don't get too far ahead of ourselves here. Again, I think that, you know, the intention would be just an initial notice on just the issues of these with respect to the study. I don't know if we're, I mean, we may put out, I mean, this may go in different phases in terms of comments on the full schedule or scope of this, but this is just kind of the more narrow focus of this study and potentially talking about these meetings. I don't know if we're prepared yet to have a full-blown comment on scope, et cetera, but this is just, you know, we're kind of taking this a step. So that would be the initial first step idea. Yes, Ms. Beth.
So two comments. Okay. So first, I want to be respectful of what you just said. I think I had it before you said it. But so I'm going to still ask my question.
Yep.
And that is just to, I think, let you know that I think most people in the room are a little bit anxious to understand how the whole process will lay out. So being respectful of your desire to take it phase by phase, just please understand that people are anxious to understand
I appreciate you saying that, and we anticipate elucidating further on this topic in that notice.
My second comment would be concern about allowing more than 30 days to comment to this study, because it starts to beg the question of where we are in this. So first of all, if we take more than 30 days, not 30 days, it is into December. And Rockmount Power is trying to get all of their people signed up if they seem confident that they will, so that they're gathering data starting in January 1. And so really, if we take longer than 30 days, what does it mean? And even frankly, if we provide comments in 30 days, what does it mean? The commission has indicated they're not taking evidence. So are we looking to provide comments and have the commission rule on whether or not this is a satisfactory study?
I'm glad you mentioned that. So let's clear this up here. This is, again, the commission has no intention of directing the companies what will be ultimately be a piece of evidence used in whatever. I mean, they may or may not ever actually file a charge. And this is, again, this is something that we've asked them to do a study. This is the first step. So yeah, that's a good point, Michelle, that this is really an opportunity for the company to hear from others of what they think is important in their study. The commission will not be issuing a ruling or an order saying that it should look like this. This will, again, will be evidence, and we don't really want to shape their evidence at this point. So yeah, so that's why, again, maybe to Michelle's point, maybe and also understand the company has to get going. It seems to me maybe like
so George, if I understood what you said, is that this is the company study that the company will use to present its evidence when something gets filed for rate making.
That's right.
Stocking. That doesn't preclude us from listening to comments from other people, and they choose to have that influence how we do it. It's the company study, the company will defend your study.
This will be part of whatever, you know, comes about in terms of what you want to present. If you want to listen to people, that's fine, but ultimately, you know, obviously this is going to come up at some point, and then at the right place and time, and when the evidence is actually submitted.
Yeah.
And I'd like to respond to that. I think that one, 30 days is enough. I understand that the commission wouldn't want to, you know, try to influence this study. And our goal would be to to be able to at least come together as much as we can on the study and be, so we're not saying, oh, you did this study wrong. But if we can come together and shape a study that we think is reasonable, that would be our desired outcome.
Failing that, though, there's nothing to prevent anyone else from undertaking their own study other than finding the customers.
Well, we don't have that.
Well, I mean, if you've got a group of folks that are advocating for this issue that have gotten together and they know each other and they know their system, they could do
Other groups don't have, I mean, we have authority to put our research leaders on our customers.
Yeah.
Another party wouldn't have that. We don't have authority
on
to put the production leaders on. We need permission. Another party would need permission from a customer to do that.
Well, that's what I'm saying. So how about this?
What if we, again, and I'm open to, how about 30 days and does it make sense? I'm not making promises on either part of the, but does it make sense for obviously the company can always work informally to the extent they want and with other parties to, we don't need to get involved in that meeting the commission in terms, but does that, I mean, I'm assuming the company is always open to talking to folks, so, I'm assuming the company wants the best evidence they can, they're listening right now, so. Gary.
I guess I'm confused about what this docket is. The title says, in the matter of the investigation of the costs and benefits of net metering, which is, I think, consistent with the statute.
Yeah.
But you've kind of just said you don't envision evidence or
I do envision evidence at some point. What I'm saying is this study that comes out of this will be a piece of evidence. The commission does not want to shape that evidence. There'll be more information to come about getting comments on the different types of metrics, et cetera. Ultimately, we got it. You know, if a company submits something, we're gonna have to go through the exercise of, you know, under the statute of weighing costs and benefits. How we do that? This is just one of the pieces of the puzzle, I guess.
But you say if they submit something.
Well,
I think your job is to investigate costs and benefits regardless of what the commission, the company submits.
What I mean is if they submit something, meaning if they request another charge, or a charge or a change in the scale.
But that would be in a rate case, like in the 2016.
Presumably, I don't know.
You don't envision this document leading to an order saying here are the costs and benefits for various customers. I'm just trying to say whether for my customer group I want to participate.
Well,
it was really just a bunch of technical conferences. We have less interest than if the commission's going to issue an order at the end of this saying, here's what we determine are the costs and benefits of net metering. That's a very different at the docket, the one that says if someone wants to come forward with a proposal, you know, have at it. So I'm just confused. Maybe you guys haven't decided, but I think it's important for you to clarify that so people know to what extent they want to participate.
Yeah.
Well, Gary, thanks for those comments. And if I could just add more, there are a few other items the commission had interest in getting input on in addition to the load study. And so the commission's intention is to issue a procedural order, to solicit additional comments that will help to flesh out this docket and or to examine the costs and benefits in this docket. For example, the commission is interested in finding out what interested parties think about the use of the DSM tests that have been currently are approved for use in examining distributed generation, and the commission is interested in getting input on what the appropriate tests are to be conducted in this examination to look at costs and benefits. And so to that end, you stay tuned. You will be seeing a procedural order with requests for that. Possibly that would be in connection with a scheduling order to look at how to collect that information. But we thought this was a first step. We didn't really know how much time it was going to take the company to collect this data, whether it needed to wait a whole year. I mean, the intention was not to waste a whole year, not look at the other components that need to be done in this docket. But we just wanted to hear where you're starting and what you have in mind. So I think that's the intention right now, is to issue, for the commission to issue an order that will solicit comments on the load research study, and in addition, some other components of this examination, if that would work on paper.
No, I'm wondering, I'm also starting, I mean, we rewrote now, in my testimony, that we'd really like to be as collaborative as possible on study design. I mean, I remember the TELUS days that led to the DSM programs, and to be as collaborative as possible, and then things that don't work in a study group or things that aren't determined, then maybe those would go, further. But it would be nice, I know that many states have had sort of a stakeholder process where they really vet out and determine, because if it's just filing, crossing testimony versus really trying to work together as a group to come up with some parameters that work.
Well, and like I said, the purpose of today's meeting was not to re, to make conclusions on everything that needs to happen in this docket, but appreciate your comments and perhaps.
And I don't know how you make that happen. It's got to be a commission sanctioned study or group or.
So that's certainly something you want, again, when we issue this notice, it won't be an order, they'll notice that that's something you might want to, outline or suggest. Or.
Becky, how soon might we see that order? And will it solicit items beyond DSM or some others that are identified?
At this point, that was the intention, was to solicit information on the cost-benefit tests and the types of tests that should be conducted or examined or used to examine this issue. I would suspect you'd see an order within probably a couple of weeks.
Yeah, notice, yeah.
Yeah, an order notice. Does that seem reasonable?
Yeah, that helps.
Yeah, we understand there's a lot of interest and a lot of questions right now. We're going to try to do our best we can to try to tee this up and firm it up a bit.
Is the ultimate goal to finish this docket prior to the next GRC? Because if so, you don't have a lot of time, a year.
Well, that's a question I have for the company as well, is whether getting data in September of 2015 gives you enough time to do that in advance of the theoretical January 16 filing.
We think so.
And this is still under the assumption that you're able to get the customers, right? For the 62 basis.
Yeah. It's picked up speed though. So I think you've increased our confidence level in getting those.
Yes.
See, that's much better than like 2 weeks ago.
After we come to terms on what's study, once I feel confident, I will. I'll help.
I just want to support Sarah really quick. I think what we've seen in other states, when we've seen successful cost-benefit analysis, all the teams have come together at various steps within the process and made sure that everyone was approving every step of the process. Some states had independent evaluators, which were quite successful. And what I realize that this is load research is just one toolkit that will be used later on. It's going to be a significant toolkit. So I think to the extent that we can work together, I think that would be the ideal. Make sure that we have a strong load research team.
What are the states that we should follow?
Nevada just recently had a cost benefit analysis, and again, they had an independent evaluator at every single step of the process. So I think that's one state that we could look into.
And a stakeholder group.
Yeah. Or independent evaluation at every step.
And to that end, I mean, we've already received some questions from you, and I think we hopefully addressed most of those through this presentation.
And I appreciate that. I'm not a world research expert, though, so.
But, rather than waiting the 30 days, if you have comments that you could bring to us sooner, since we are trying to get everything done and installed by the end of the year.
And one of them that I'm not sure I articulated very well is some stratification on system size within those groups, because like I said, if the large energy users are going to have a much different impact on the grid, the smaller customers.
Well, I suspect one thing we could do is we can go back from our current, the sample we selected, and get at least the best data we have is what the systems are for those customers, and see how well diversified that is.
And then also information on adaptive cooler versus air conditioning.
That may be more difficult.
Yeah. I mean, that's a survey if you have 25 customers.
survey them?
62.
62.
And I'm still planning to get the comments in 30 days, but I think also we weren't really sure what was going to be presented today, and we didn't have any documents beforehand, so we also came in thinking like, okay, this will be a chance for us to really set a schedule and get comments. And so.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, we want to work with you on this. We don't want to be fighting about the load research study.
A year from now.
Yeah, yeah. We'd rather
exactly.
come
we
together.
Don't
Those are really encouraging.
Yeah, I will have plenty of other things.
Yeah.
I have one more question. And you may have answered this in one of your earlier slides talking about ongoing load research studies that you do, but will you have equivalent 15-minute data for non-net metering residential customers that can be compared to the data that generated from this study?
The residential sample we have now is non-net metering.
But it's not 15 minutes.
It's 15
yeah.
minutes.
Yeah.
It's all non-net metering.
For 195.
Did you exclude them or did you just
No,
it
it's just the population. We have 700,000 residential customers and a couple thousand net metering customers. So I don't know if we have any net metering customers
that are in the sample.
Yeah.
No, they would have become Schedule 135. And
yeah, they would have.
They weren't purposely excluded.
No,
right,
might,
that was my
yeah,
question.
Yeah. Okay. So if we do, it's just a randomness.
And will you have data from the same time period?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, we once we put a load research sample in place, we leave it in continually. So
okay.
Once it's in, we collect continual data.
That's what this slide.
That's what I was thinking, but I just
so the same samples
I mean,
are in for 5 years. And
there are some companies who put it in, collect data for a few years and take it out and just use that data for a number of years all ago. We collect data every year on all the load research.
You come in on schedule 23, but roughly how many 6, 8, and 9, or 6 and 8 net meter customers are there? Because 9 is not eligible, right?
I forgot to turn it up, but I can't pull it. Yeah. We have that off my head.
Hey, Joelle, are you guys? I just the,
yeah,
in terms of the commissioners leaving. Are you guys? I mean, you guys are welcome to stay, but are you? Are we done with the presentation?
Yes.
Okay, so we've got other things to attend to, so.
We're ignoring this
one. We got the room for a while, so happy to chat. But if you know there's something we should have,
I have a question that regarding the next technical workshops. Is there other data that the company will have to collect or gather in that same time period as you're doing the load research? Or what data will they have to collect for those kind of benefits, values, impacts on the grid?
Well, I think the answer to that is yes. I mean, as you're talking about the value of distributed generation, the value that every customer provides, we have certain data on how we value avoided energy costs and that type of stuff, which I'm sure will come into this discussion. Might not be the only thing that comes into discussion. We certainly have data to collect on that. And Douglas, you know, may have some thoughts on impact on distribution grid and so forth, but that you know, what additional information can be captured there.
So you want me to say something now?
But yeah, I was just curious, you know, when you talk about impacts on the grid, it would seem like you'd need to know
mm-hmm.
at what penetration level it starts affecting the grid, and does it matter if you've got, you know, a mix of residential versus commercial on the same circuit? I'm just curious what data you intended to collect or.
Well, you're right. I mean, you're looking at penetration levels. You're looking at customer mix. You're looking at location. You know, is it located at the proper place on the circuit to give you any benefit or not? You know, what do you have to do with operating your system for both fault detection and fault recovery? And what if you start to couple that in with a more intelligence with like FDIR system? So there's a lot of data that's got to be put together. And we're going to rely on a lot of other companies that already have a lot of this stuff in place and working with their engineers and their staff to find out what are you seeing and what's happening on your systems. I mean, you can do the academic studies to a degree, but until you see the real world implications,
yeah.
It doesn't really give us a lot of.
So I assume the other parties will have an opportunity to.
When I think this is a good kickoff meeting for this examination, and you know the docket is to examine the costs and benefits of the integrated program and and there will be more work that will need to be done. And I think we may have kind of finished up with the topics of the day. And so when we end here.
Nevada utilities are also our utility. We work for that utility. Before you go down the path of using the Nevada approach, which Nevada just hired, the commission hired you three for doing that. Nevada did not have production data on the DGs. Now I refer to DG, not NEM. They did not have production data for the DG customer. They also did not have interval data on the demand side. They had AMI meters, but you have to, that doesn't give you the data that you need. You have to do an inquiry into your data bank in order to get the interval data that you want. Neither of those two pieces of information were in the E3 study. Nevada's going back, or our Nevada utilities are going back right now and looking at the installation of production metering as well as inquiring the database. So those two key elements were missing from the E3 study in Nevada. And that's why it's important that we get that data here and all the other states that we serve are trying to get that data. So just being a little cautious about Nevada, it's not really the model that I suggest you follow.
Well, my sense was her comments were geared at the general structure of the process.
Yeah. Well, with that, you know, we thank everybody for attending today and participating, and I think it's going to be a fun year. Stay tuned. We'll be sending something else
anyway. Right?
Thank you very much.
Turn this off.
You know, I close now. Let me get
I'm going to go to the next one.